Thank you, Sean. Well, first thing, let's turn off our toys. I'm going to try to use the screen here tonight to as a visual aid. I don't like it, but I can't really talk about what I want to talk about without using it. So a few Sunday nights passed, we all met at the East Local, and the young men of the church put on a skit, I call it a skit, about the Last Supper. And when I attended that, I knew immediately what I was going to speak on tonight. They did an excellent job. They just really did. And then Jeff did an excellent job of summing up what it was supposed to show. And I really appreciated what they did. But I knew that that was Act 1 and that I was going to do Act 2. So we'll see how it goes tonight. I don't have I'll give you my welcoming screen, but I don't have a blank screen with my title, but it is the title if you want to give it one, and I think the people in the sound booth want that. It's called The Last Supper. This is the traditional Last Supper, and I hope you can see it. This is the Giovanni Rigazzelli copy. It's in the Royal Academy of Arts in London. It was done somewhere around 520 AD. And this gentleman worked with Leonardo da Vinci for the Last Supper. He did whatever assistants do. He was probably apprenticing as a painter, but then later he himself painted this. It's probably a better presentation than the original. I'm going to show you the original, and it's in terrible shape. I had always thought that the Last Supper was probably hanging in the Louvre, or maybe in Rome or somewhere like that. And come to find out, it's not. It's in Milan, Italy. And that's because it is painted on the wall of a monastery. And the original is in the Santa Maria della Grazia Monastery in Milan. And it's only 20% intact today. It was hit by Allied bombers during the Second World War, and then it has deteriorated rapidly over the years, and it just hasn't maintained itself well. And the other artists have gone in, they've cleaned it, they've tried to restore it, they've tried to put it back the way Leonardo painted it, but they haven't had a whole lot of success. But this gentleman who had worked with Leonardo came up with this, which is in the museum there in London. I want to point out some things about this because it's really important for us to think about why did Leonardo paint it in the first place? What did he have in mind? What was he trying to show? Now, we have to look at Da Vinci's background. He was 46 years old when he painted this, when he painted his. He was born in 1452, died in 1519, and so that was the period that we all recognize, 1492, when Columbus sailed the ocean blue. You remember that little song we used to sing as kids? And so he dates from that period, which means he lived 1,462 years after Christ. How did he know what the men looked like, or who they were, or what their position was at the table, where they sat, what they did? And they have found in Leonardo's study notebooks that contain his research on this, and it doesn't tell us much about that. He identified 9 of the men and where they were. How he did that, I don't know. The other 3 he guessed at. And so I'll try to show you who they are. Over here is Bartholomew. Next to him is James the Greater. Then we have Andrew. He's got the gold vest on there. We've got Judas right here. He's in this little blue coat and he's leaning on the table. He's got his elbow on the table. It's interesting, and it's pointed out by the historians, he's the only one leaning on the table. Weren't you taught as a kid that when you went to the table, that part of your etiquette was you didn't put your elbows on the table, you didn't lean on the table? Weren't you ever taught that? I was. Maybe they don't teach that today. Well, we think Leonardo's purpose, main purpose, was not religion. He painted this to show the frailties of men and their attitudes. And so here's Judas. He's the bad guy. He's leaning on the table. And they're pretty sure that this is Judas because he's holding a bag of money right here. Okay. And then, of course, we have John. We have Christ. This is Thomas right here. I've got another interesting picture of Thomas. Curtis isn't here tonight, is he? No, that's a shame. All right. The fellow in the green is James the Greater. We have Philip. Matthew is this guy. We have Jude. And we have Simon the Zealot. Okay, we'll come back to this with some more detail and some more trivia in a little bit. But I want to go on. Let's see if I can figure out how to do this. Okay, that looks a lot like the first one, but this one was by Andreas Solari. It's a copy, and it's in the Tangelello Abbey in Belgium. And there are some historians that think that he didn't really paint this, that Andreas didn't paint it, that it's really a secret of Leonardo's that he painted 2, one on canvas and one as a fresco in Milan. And they think this might be the one because they've taken it and superimposed it over an image of the original and everything matches. The shapes, the size, the fingers, the hands, everything. And so they don't see how, even though this Andreas worked with Leonardo, he was also an apprentice, and it was also painted in about 520 AD, But they don't think that's coincidence. They think Leonardo might have done it. I don't know whether he did or not. But at any rate, it hangs in a museum in this abbey in Belgium. Let's see if we... here's Judas. Notice his elbow. He's leaning on the table. He's the bad guy with no etiquette. All right. Let's go on here. Now, this one's a little different. Shows Judas here. He's slinking off into the dark. He's going to tell on Jesus, turn him into the authorities. You'll notice that Jesus in his right hand is holding a goblet. This was done much after the other two paintings. It followed the Dark Ages. It was probably done in the early 1400s. We're not real sure. But at any rate, that may have gone along with the story of the Holy Grail, and we're pretty sure that was perpetuated by the Catholic Church. But at any rate, Jesus is holding a goblet right here. You'll notice that there are no other goblets. That's the only one, and the rest of them are around him. Here's John right here. That's the only one I can pick out right now other than Judas. If you go to the internet and you look up the Last Supper and the places where you can buy prints of it so that you can hang it in your home, you're going to be amazed. There are hundreds of them, and you can get any kind and any size and any position of the people that you want. You just can have your pick, whatever you think. This is an interesting one. This is on a wall in a salt mine in Poland. And it's a carving. By the way, if any of you have ever been in the big Christian church out on Ward Parkway, it looks like a castle. There is a representation of the Last Supper in life-size carvings in wood in the foyer to that church. I don't know who the artist was, but it's kind of interesting. It's almost worth driving out there and looking at it because they are life-size and they're arranged around the table, and it's very, very interesting. But this is in a salt mine in Poland. So you can get just about anything you want as far as the Last Supper is concerned. Let me see if I have one more here. Oh yes, this is Curtis's. This is called Modern Living. And doesn't this guy right here look like Curtis? That was painted somewhere in the 1900s. Probably in this country, I don't know. I don't have an artist, but you'll notice that these people are obviously of our lineage or our generation, I guess maybe I should say. And John is right here. He's supposedly was the youngest of the 12 apostles, and they show him right there. Here's Judas right here with his elbow on the table. This guy's elbow isn't on the table. This one back here has his arm on it, but he isn't got don't have his elbow on it. But Judas is obviously leaning on the table. How many of you were at the Monday night at the East Lowell? Oh, not everybody. Okay, do any of you remember how many goblets were on the table? There were 13. How many are on this table? Two, three, four, five, six. And actually, there would have to be 13 if there was one for everybody, including Jesus, you know. The one I showed you that had the, what I think came from the description of the Holy Grail, was a single. Now, I want to go back. And, I have one more here. And this was perpetuated, I'm sure, by the Catholic Church. It's called the Eucharist. And you notice the Eucharist that Christ is holding right here? This would be John over here on the left-hand side of Christ, not the right. This author apparently thought he was on the wrong side in the original because he was on Christ's right, but here he's on the left. And I don't think this is Judas, but he's the guy with the elbows on the table. And I'm not sure if we can really identify which one is Judas. Not that it makes a lot of difference. But that's where they... did my light just go out? I think it did. Those little flat batteries, and they don't last very long. Is it working? No. Okay, I want to go back to, let me see. I guess it's time to show you the original Da Vinci. And that's the way it looks today. Did you get it working?
No.
No. Okay. I want you to notice the center of the table, and underneath it, somebody in their wisdom cut a door in the wall. Because this painting is on the wall of this monastery. That, by the way, is the definition of a fresco. And this is called a fresco. Now, it's not a true fresco, because true frescoes are when the paint is applied to a wet wall. And then as the underlayment of the wall, wet, dries, and then the paint dries, it brings out different colors, 3D effect, that sort of thing, that the artists have all studied. Da Vinci was experimenting with a new form, and so he didn't wet the wall. He painted his fresco on a dry wall, so it doesn't really fit the definition of a true fresco. The King of France at one time made a trip down there, and he was going to tear the wall down and take the wall home and put it in his castle back in France. And he discovered he'd destroy the abbey if he did, so he didn't take it home with him. But it's a pretty good sized wall, and it has deteriorated. The abbey of Corvus was hit by the bombers in World War II, and the paint has flaked. The wall being dry, the paint didn't dry like it normally does in a true fresco, and so it didn't have any lasting effect. And the last time they tried to restore it was in 1999. And that's the way it looks today. It's in pretty sad shape. You'll notice that not only is there a doorway cut in the wall, but when they did that, they destroyed Jesus' feet. And you can barely make out the feet on some of the other guys underneath. And you'll notice Judas over here with his elbow on the table. You can make that out, but just barely. What I want to bring out is that people today look at the Last Supper and they tend to say that's what happened, or that's the way it really looked, or that's what Jesus did. And that's not the case. That's not a photograph. It was done 1,462 years after Christ. How did Leonardo know what happened? Now, like I said, they found his notebook. He identified 9 of the guys, but they can't find any trace that he really identified all 12 of them. And then, so he identified them. How do you know what they looked like 1,400 years later? Well, I want to ask you, the Last Supper, what was Christ's intent? Why do we have a record of the Last Supper? What went on there that night? When I read the first one here, I think of Marvin because he preached a sermon on this one time. It's been a long time ago. It's the new commandment that he gave the apostles at the Last Supper. And the new commandment was, love each other as I have loved you. That was one of the reasons he wanted to be there with them at the Last Supper and eat that Passover together. He wasn't really interested in the Passover because he had the new gospel to present to them. We already know that. That's what upset the Jews. He wanted to give them a commandment, and it was love thy neighbor as thyself. And then he really brought it down to focus on them. Love each other as I have loved you. And that's recorded, if you want to write it down, in John 13:14. I don't think I'll read those tonight. You've had them read to you in sermons. And if you want to make a note and look them up, you can. But it's verse 34 in John 13. The new commandment. What was the other thing? Philip helped him. Philip said, show us the Father. Why won't you show us the Father? What did Jesus answer? You all know the answer. You know the answer? He said, Philip, how long have I been with you? And you haven't recognized I am the Father is in me. He looked like the Father. His Father looked like him. And he was the Savior. And Philip wanted to know, show us the Father. This was probably something a lot of the Jews were having problems with. Then, after the supper, we know what Jesus did to them. That's right, he did something to them. It says that he hung up his garments, tied a towel around his waist, got a basin of water, and he washed their feet one at a time. Of course, he got to Peter, and Peter's the macho guy, you know. He says, you're not going to wash my feet. And he said, you don't love me if I can't wash your feet. And they argued about it a little bit. And then Peter, he said, okay, wash my face, my ears, everything, you know. He went the other way. That was sort of Peter's personality. But Jesus then said, do you know what I've done to you? He asked him the question. He described to them service, that you serve people. They don't serve you. And he wanted to get that across to them. In other places in Matthew, he told them that the magistrates and the people over them have authority, but he said, you're not going to have any of that. You're a servant for the people to teach the gospel. And they, at that point, they still hadn't quite got that. Even though he'd been with them 4 or 5 years, going around the country, telling the gospel, they hadn't really got it yet. And then he told John, he said, when I leave, because John just wasn't picking up on this idea that he was going to suffer death. In fact, most of them didn't think so. History tells us that the historians and the theologians think that was the real reason that that was painted. Whoops, way less here. Let's go to one you can see here. I'll go back to the copy in London. That's probably the best one. Okay. Notice over here, Thomas has got his finger in the air. They're all holding their hands out there saying, oh my gosh, he's going to die. It hadn't sunk in. And they are supposed to have, the historians tell us, looks on their faces that show that they are stunned, awestruck, mad, all those expressions. And that was Leonardo's purpose. It wasn't religion. It was to show the relationship of the frailties and interaction of men. And so then he explained to John that he was going to die and that the Comforter couldn't come until he had died, until he'd been resurrected. Then the Comforter would come. And he explains that to them. And then he ended up by telling them that somebody there at the table was going to betray him. And then they really were awestruck. They started saying, is it I? Is it I? Probably their consciences were all bothering them because after all, they were men. They probably had sins like we do. And they were suddenly condemning themselves or saying, is it I? And they were all a little afraid. And again, the historians think that that's one of the purposes that Leonardo had when he painted this. If you want to read about Philip, it's in John 14, the eighth verse. If you want to read about his washing the feet, it's in John 13, verse 4. If you want to read about his explanation of the coming of the Comforter, it's in John 14, verses 16, and then again in the 26th verse. He hits it twice. And then he tells them about the betrayal in Matthew 26, 21. And last but not least, the sacrament. He gives them the sacrament because, as we know, and the scriptures are very clear, they explain this. If you go back to the Old Testament and read the purpose for the Passover, and then in the New Testament read what Jesus said was the purpose of the sacrament, they are different. One is not the other. We don't do the Passover. They are symbolically linked, and they are alike, but they are not the same ordinance. And he explains that to them. And the sacraments in four places, Matthew 26, 26, Mark 14 and verse 22, Luke 22 and verse 16, and in 1 Corinthians 11 and 23, Paul reiterates at his time what the apostles were told at the Last Supper, which I think is very significant. So Let's look again here at some of the attributes. I told you about Judas. Da Vinci kind of jokingly worked in something else here that's something common to man. Look at Judas's elbow on the table, and he's clutching the bag of coins. I don't have my little shiner here to put it on it, but if you look very carefully at about halfway up on his forearm, there is a container, looks like a cup, tipped on its side, and there's something on the table. It's the container of salt. Now, in their day and age, salt was an expensive commodity, and poor people, weren't too many poor people had salt. The rich had it, and the middle class. It was a big item in commerce. Salt was really important to the people. It was one of the few spices that they had for their food. And they had a saying that went along with that. How many of you, when you were kids, or maybe now, have ever heard the saying, spill the beans? You know, that's somebody who can't keep a secret. They just got to tell everything, and you say, oh, you spilled the beans. You know, you don't literally spilling beans, but that's the saying that went with it. There's another one came out of the Civil War. At the time that John Wilkes Booth was escaping after killing Lincoln, he was injured and he was treated by a country doctor. And they've later found, and the historians have traced and came to the conclusion, this doctor was innocent. He didn't know John Wilkes Booth, wasn't a conspirator, but they arrested him anyway and sent him to prison. And his name was Mudd, Dr. Mudd. And so the saying came out of the Civil War, if you did something wrong, or especially if you aided somebody that did something wrong, they'd say, your name's gonna be Mudd. You ever heard that expression? Okay, you know. Or kids in school, they'd say, don't do that, boy, your name's gonna be Mudd. That means the teacher's gonna be all over you, okay? Well, they had one at this time, too, in the 1400s. It was called the guy that spills the salt. The klutz, the one who doesn't have good etiquette, doesn't have good manners, he does everything wrong, he just doesn't have it together, they say he spilled the salt. And Leonardo worked that into his painting because there is a container right up there that is the salt container, and Judas has spilled it. He's the guy that spilled the salt. See, they didn't have salt shakers like you and I do, that you can reach out and shake them like that. They had little bowls, and they put the salt in the bowl. You took a pinch of that salt, sprinkled it on your steak or whatever you wanted to flavor, you know. And so he tipped over the bowl of salt. He was the bad guy. I think that's kind of funny myself, but. How many of you have ever read the Da Vinci Code? Who's read the Da Vinci Code? Really? You've read it. Are you the only one?
I was the only one to raise my hand.
I don't know. The only one to raise your hand or that will admit they read the Da Vinci Code. Okay, well, it's the book by Dan Brown where he tries to show, and it's a pretty good book. It's exciting. It's a novel and so forth. But it's based on the fact that there is secret codes that Leonardo worked into his paintings. And one of them is that he got his wife into the painting because, you know, after all, Jesus was married. He married Mary Magdalene, and she's in the Last Supper. You didn't know that? That's what Dan Brown says in his book. If you look at John over here on the left-hand side, use the mouse. Oh, okay. There's John right there. You will notice that John is painted with red hair and is effeminate looking. And Dan Brown said, that's really Mary Magdalene, that's not John. There's just one problem with that. If you read the scripture here, John 14, 16 and 21, where he addresses John, John was there. How many apostles were there? 12. They were all there, even Thomas, this time. So if that's Mary Magdalene, where's John? Well, Dan Brown doesn't explain that in his book because he can't. And I showed you another Last Supper that someone painted, and they had John on the other side, sitting on the left of Jesus instead of the right. Not only that, what does it say about in the Last Supper when you read it? John is sitting on the right, but what about his relationship with Christ? It says he's leaning on Christ's bosom. Now, if you take that literally, bosom means chest, and you would think that John would be laying across Christ, I would propose to you that the word that's translated from doesn't mean anatomically the chest. Just like it talks about our thoughts, whether they be evil or good, come from the heart. We know you think with your brain. Your heart doesn't have any thinkability to it. It's a different type of organ with different muscles. It's involuntary, true, just like the brain, but it doesn't produce thought processes. But the Bible says he thought from the heart. That's a translation thing. And I would propose to you that when it says John was leaning on his bosom, that meant that was like saying their hearts were linked, or they believed the same things, or they had a kindred spirit, that they were linked together because he loved Jesus. But it did very directly say, and pick up any of your Bibles, and I think, too, I'll be so bold as to say, pick up any version of Bible you want. I think it will say that John was leaning on Jesus. He probably had his arm around him, or he was leaning on that right shoulder. In the picture by Leonardo, where's John? He's leaning over towards Judas, not Christ. He's leaning the wrong direction. So not only is that not Mary Magdalene, they've given the description, or Leonardo has painted the description of John's presence in error. Because if we believe the Bible, and it's true, he was leaning against Christ, right up against him. I'm about to make my point, finally, and you're wondering where I'm going with this. This isn't a photograph. It's Leonardo's idea of what he thinks happened and the things that he wants to portray. It's not real, and it has led to several things, mythological things, false doctrines like the Holy Grail, the Eucharist, some of those kind of things that it has led to through the years because men choose to believe other men or believe something like this rather than to look into the scriptures. And so I want to echo what Jeff said that night. It was true. It happened. We know that. Now, you can argue the flood if you want to. You can argue Noah's Ark if you want to. There are a number of things in the Bible that we have trouble with wrapping our mind around them. But the Last Supper and the description of the men there in the scriptures is so clear and so plain and so laid out, you can't argue with that. And you want to believe what it says, not what some painting or some artist from 1400 says. Very important. Believe the truth. Believe the scriptures. Now I want to carry this one step further. The Last Supper didn't begin or end with the supper. It began 6 days before, when Jesus entered Jerusalem. How did he enter Jerusalem? He performed a miracle. You remember the story? He told a couple of his apostles to go down on a certain street. You're going to find a colt tied up there. You get that colt and bring him back, and I'm going to ride him into Jerusalem. Remember that story? Okay. Let me ask you a question, Sean. If some guy would walk into your driveway, holler, "Hi, Sean, my master needs the use of your truck," and he climbed in and drove off with it, what would you do? You'd call the cops. Yeah. Who was this person that owned this colt? Why didn't he call? He could have called the Romans and said, "That guy just stole my colt." And he didn't. He knew. Was he a member of the church? We don't know. It doesn't say. That's not important. It happened. And so it was a miracle. Christ arranged that. He knew that colt was going to be there. How did he know? I don't know, but he did. And the men found it. And that started this process. If the apostles had been alert and watching the things he did, the education started there, not just at the dinner. Another one was 2 days before the dinner. He told a couple of the apostles, a couple of the other guys, said, "Go down in this street, and there'll be a fellow walking along with a pitcher, and follow him, and go in and go to the upper room, and it's set up and it's ready to have the Last Supper." Well, now, if somebody, you were walking down the street and somebody followed you to your house and you went up to your door and they came right on up and were going to come in behind you, well, what would you think? You'd call the cops, like you said. But this person knew these apostles were coming. He let them in when they followed him. They had to climb some stairs to get to the second floor and find the room. And then it was all set up with the plates and everything. I assume the food wasn't out there yet, but some of it might have been. They may have been break the bread or something, you know. But there was preparation for a dinner in advance. How did that happen? Who arranged it? Who told who to do it? Had to cost something. In those days, that wasn't cheap. And you look at those miracles. And then, of course, following the supper, and they went out and went to the garden, and he was betrayed, and other miracles. It was just amazing. So we can look at the painting and ooh and ah if we want to, but the story didn't begin there or end there. It was part of it. And to get the true story and the true meaning, we have to go to the scriptures, which points out that that is our guide. That's what we believe, not what somebody has frozen in history. Well, and after all, that was a big deal right then when Leonardo painted that fresco. The patron, who was the owner of the Santa Maria Grazia Monastery, paid him a lot of money to paint that fresco. It took him about 6 years to do it, by the way. And there is another story goes with that. You may have heard the story. I have, that he painted the fresco. He got Jesus painted in, but he had one face left, the face of Judas. But he couldn't find a face mean enough to put in his painting, somebody to copy, because these guys sat when he painted this. He copied people, and and we don't know their names or who they were. And that later he found this guy that had this mean-looking face, and he was apparently a criminal, and he got him to sit for him, and he painted Judas, and it turned out to be the same guy that he'd painted Christ from years before. That story is not true. That's a fabrication. And history is real strong. Again, if you Google it, you'll discover that there are a lot of stories out there, and that particular one is not true. There is another one that which I like, and I think probably might have been true. He took so long to do the painting that the guy that handled the money for the patron who owned the monastery got unhappy with him and kept saying, come on, finish your picture, finish it. And he didn't. He drug it out, probably paid him money every year, you know, to get it done, but then he didn't finish it. And this guy got madder and madder and madder. And apparently, he was what they portrayed then as a typical overseer, you know, who used the money. He was always mad at everybody. He had a scowl on his face. He had an ugly countenance. And that, so to play tricks on him and have a little fun, Leonardo painted his expression for Judas. I like that one. I think that's a pretty good story. Is it true? I don't know. To end my presentation, again, I reiterate, if you have questions about anything like this, your life, how you should run it, the lessons, the stories in the Bible, read them, Bible, Book of Mormon, both. Because that's where the truth is, not in things like the Last Supper. It looks nice. And I think the final clinch to my thought that Leonardo wasn't interested in religion. The one thing that comes out of the Last Supper that we use today, the ordinance of the sacrament, he performed it not only there, but also in this land with the Lamanites, where he served the bread and the wine. Look at this picture. How many goblets do you see on the table? Sunday night, out at the East Local, there were 13. There are none up here. Now, there are some little containers that look like they might be Demitas cups or something, and I suppose they could be, but there are no goblets on that table. Leonardo didn't put any in there. He wasn't the least bit interested in the sacrament. And so that idea of the Holy Grail and the Eucharist and some of those I showed you were perpetuated by the Catholic Church right after the Dark Ages. They're not in the original painting. I found that very interesting. If anybody would like those scriptures I read, because I read them kind of fast, come and see me. I'll be glad to give them to you, but I'm sure you can find them with your concordance, or you've already read them or know where they are. But if you're interested in this sort of thing, or maybe we've got some art critics out here, I don't know. Google it. You'll be interested in what you find and what history says about something that is so common. Read your scriptures, folks, and believe the truth. Thank you.